You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back in Studio One for another episode
of the M Squared TechCast.
Yeah. We've been here in Royal Oak for, 3 years now, 3 of the 4 years we've been doing this thing.
Yeah.
And we have been over in the new TV studio, but today we're back in the audio studio,
the audio. The curse of the TV studio, right, David?
I'm just going to call it the Brennan's curse.
Is that what
it is? Because it works fine, except for Mondays.
Okay.
I could give you the whole list of things that have gone wrong over there, but we don't have time for that.
What's the old song, I Don't Like Mondays? Yeah, right. Okay.
Rainy days and Mondays. Go ahead. Why don't you introduce
us? All right. Yeah, we have a great lineup of guests for you today. We're going to start off the show with Bruce Sizemore of More Golf. He is a Michigan entrepreneur, and not only is he the only person manufacturing golf clubs in Michigan, he is the only person manufacturing golf clubs in the entire United States of America, which is pretty cool. So, Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in the golf industry. I know you were saying before the show that you started on a public course in Livonia when you were just a little kid, right?
Sure. Yeah, so I began a game kind of just in fields because that's what was the opportunity at the time. But so I was born and raised in the Detroit area, and I started playing at a very young age. Began caddying then at Franklin Hills Country Club, graduated through to a couple of different clubs, played on the high school golf team, and then went to Ferris State. At that time, this dates me, but at that time, Ferris State was the only professional golf management program in the country.
Hmm.
And so I went there after I left Ferris State. I went and took some teaching positions at Braeburn Country Club in Purchase, New York, Country Club of Indianapolis, as well as Diamond Bar Club in California, with the intent and goal to play on tour. So when I left there, I started playing on various tours in the U.S., and my back, though, didn't kind of agree. So by the time I was 28, my playing career through injuries was pretty much done, and certainly still a strong passion for golf. And so that's when I transitioned into golf club design. So my first 10 years of being a golf professional was first as a player, professional player, and instructor, and the last 20 years have been solely in golf club design.
Hmm.
So tell us a little bit about that design. I'm looking at the question here. It doesn't really quite fit the segue here. So you decided to get into design, and so it's sort of revolutionary. It was explained to me earlier today because I wasn't familiar with your company, but why don't you explain it?
Sure. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about disruptive technologies in certain industries. And, you know, we deem ours is more transformative because it's really kind of transformed the way golf clubs have been made. Traditionally, for the last 500 years, as long as golf has been around, the golf club has been primarily a one-piece cast or forged golf club head.
A big club, essentially, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And so our concept was to kind of explode the club apart into pieces and put it back together as a puzzle in the way that it maximizes the performance and playability of the golf club. So we just start out with a faceplate, and then our clubs are all CNC machined. In here in Michigan, and it's more of a modular component basis, so that the hosels, the flanges are all interchangeable. That allows for the custom club portion of the market for club fitters and PGA professionals to kind of dial in the golf club for the way the golf. The player delivers the golf club to the ball as opposed to the player having adapt to traditional golf club manufacturing styles.
So the components of the golf club then are manufactured as separate components, right? There's a shaft, there's a club face, and
grip and all that.
Yeah, the grip.
Right.
And how are all these things then assembled, and you make sure that the thing's not going to fall apart when you swing it?
Sure, sure. So we actually are getting into the grip line as well. Mm. So we have some really transformative new grip line that's coming out that is also component in nature, and actually for the first time has performance and playability features as well as smart technologies built into it. So we didn't want to look at it as just the club head or just the shaft or just the grip. We wanted to take all components involved and make them work together, so to speak.
Okay, so how's it assembled then? Once you have all these separate components, I see you holding on to there.
Sure. So two separate ways for the more advanced club fitters around the country, around the globe, I should say. Sometimes they just require us to send the heads and the components, and then they fit them for the players there, as well as we also send out then complete clubs, for the other market segments.
And then you these completed clubs over here next to you?
Sure, sure. So we are just launching right now our artisan line of clubs, and that's to kind of focus and showcase on our craftsmanship and artisanship. These were all 100% handcrafted in Detroit, solid copper and solid silver Moka Megani inserts, which are all hand-forged and hand-patterned, so that each one has its own kind of fingerprint, so to speak. We call it our privilege of one.
And then those also putters. I see you got four of them there. So
sure. So our club line is both our putter line and our iron line and our wedge line is what is being released right now. You can see this in its more complete form, where the faceplate, the flange and the hosel are independent of it. Mm-hmm. We also have a very unique machined in pattern into the face, which applied to the putter line creates overspin and instant roll. Huh. When applied to lofted clubs with a descending arc, creates better spin characteristics in the clubs.
And the shaft, do you build that as well?
The shaft, no. We partner with two shaft companies right now. Our mass properties are so different in our heads, meaning that we have about 60 grams more in the club head than the rest of the industry based on our super metal alloys. There's about a 70 gram difference in our hosel weight. So our clubs inherently, they're not comparable to others. So we actually had to reach out to two specific shaft manufacturers and have shafts designed specifically for the design features of our club heads.
So what's the advantage of the difference in mass that your clubs have?
Longer distance and straighter shots. So in all of our testing, we started out at U.S. Golf Laboratories in San Diego to do our robotic testing. That's the official testing center for the entire golf industry to get our baseline. And through that, we basically, through ball launch monitor systems and a robotic testing, it was the first time actually that a club line demonstrates number one performance characteristics in every single category. Being distance and shot dispersion accuracy being the two key metrics that golfers are typically looking for.
Sure.
So when you buy them, do you then buy the various pieces and assemble them yourself? Is that how it works?
Typically, we deal through networks of high-end club fitters. And they'll then fit you for the clubs. Mm-hmm. Later down the road, when you get a little bit more accustomed to the product, that's certainly an option, and that does happen. So, we tend there's two types of golfers, the kind of set it and forget it, put it together for me, fit me, and then I'm good to go. And then you get more of the gearhead performance type of golfers.
Tinkers
that are like, no, I want to interact with the clubs. And those are the type that I kind of like it myself. But
okay.
So right now, are you, what would you say in your stage? Are you're beyond beta? You're into manufacturing heavy now?
We are. So we are just launching the artisan line of putters, and we are manufacturing ready on the production putter line, which has four different models in it, as well as our wedge line and the iron line. And soon to come is our metalwood line, which has, again, all component type mm-hmm. of features to it. So our ability to kind of control launch angles, spin rates, all the different things are kind of built into the golf clubs in a different way that's been done before.
That's great. Huh. So I would imagine that all this wonderful technology does not come cheap. What is the price of these products so
sure,
far?
Sure. So it is a premium line, and mm-hmm. it does come at a premium price. Our production line for the most part, whether it's putters, wedges, or irons for now, they're all in the same price, retail price standpoint of around $400 a club. That's due to the manufacturing, the precision nature of the CNC billet machining. So we are at the premium standpoint now. Mm-hmm.
So who's your typical customer then? That really quite a golf fanatic, quite literally, right?
Sure. So any golfer obviously seeking better performance and better playability, because that's what we're about, right? Mm-hmm. But I think golf has transitioned slightly into a little bit more of an experience. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's still a wonderful game or sport, people are if they're going to invest the time and money into the sport, they're seeking a little bit higher level of experience, whether that's at the golf club they play at, and or the equipment they play. And so our goal and objective is excellence in all ways. So we don't skimp on any materials or craftsmanship or quality. It's they come at that price point because the performance and playability is there.
So how did you find your machine shop that you're working with?
That is the actual reason we brought the company back from Florida to Michigan four years ago when we started this project. My past endeavors have been pretty much putter lines, CNC billet milled putter lines. This time around, knowing that we were doing an all 14 club approach and knowing the supply chain we would need for that and the manufacturing support, it Michigan was the obvious choice. Growing up here, I knew that the CNC machining plants, the injection molding companies we need for our grip line, the finishing coating companies, the fastening technology companies. There is no other equal, in my opinion, across the country. It's right all here, and the best is all right here in Michigan.
And as we were talking beforehand, you mentioned Jackson, which kind of surprised me because I said when I drive through Jackson on the way to Grand Rapids, I'm thinking of the prison, and that's about it. But there's actually a lot going on in Jackson, right?
There certainly is. In fact, I believe one of the interesting things that I learned not too long ago is there's more golf courses in Jackson, Michigan per population than any other city in the country. Huh. But most importantly, it was the manufacturing base. So mm-hmm. They do a lot of aerospace there. Mm-hmm. And usually when you see aerospace, that tends to, and medical, that mm-hmm. that tends to let you know that there's a lot of precision manufacturing going in that area. So mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't the number one place that we were seeking, but once we started delving into what the wealth of manufacturing in the Jackson area, that became an obvious that we were going to go in that direction.
All right, so where do you think your business needs help as you look to expand and grow?
Sure. So we have obviously an amazing product line. The timing's perfect for this endeavor. We've really assembled a world-class team. At this point in time, we're in our first funding stage. Our company's been 100% self-funded internally. So we're going out and reaching out to, I guess we wouldn't call them angel investors, but kind of golf angels, mm-hmm. People that share the same mission and passion we do and want to be part of something that's this special.
Cool.
We've got a little over a minute left. This is the shameless plug time. So where you can talk about your website, how people can reach out to you however you want.
Whether they're customers or investors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. So you can go to moregolfusa.com. And check out our site. We're just launching the Artisan line there, which you'll find under the Detroit collection. And you'll see kind of a little bit of an overview of some of the first of its kind pioneering technologies that are going into the club line. It's a little bit of a teaser. In about 2 months, the site will be filled out with the launch of the entire club line.
Huh. Okay. Sort of reminds me of the start of Shinola watches. It's a premium product made here in Michigan. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All right. So that's moregolfusa.com, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us today, Bruce Sizemore of More Golf. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching and listening at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
And as many of you know, back in April, seeing the handwriting on the wall and being a publisher, I got involved in covering the marijuana cannabis business. And so we have the Michigan Marijuana Report. And by doing that, I've kind of slowly moved into the business. It's actually not a big circle of people that are players yet. So once you get in, you can kind of... Everybody introduces you to
get to know
else.
A lot of people. Yes. Yeah, it sort of reminds me of the early days of the dot-coms.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so we have one of those people that I recently met and who's putting on a conference next month that we're supporting. His name is Thomas Tong. He's putting on the Michigan Commercial Cannabis Conference and Expo at the Cobo Center October 11th and 12th.
Yes. Thank you very much for having me, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, you know... Let's talk about the state of the cannabis business. Not some of the, and the recreational side is going to take care of itself here in a few months. But let's talk about the business side of it. I mean, yes. We were talking before the show started. It's still very much of getting the pieces together, right?
Yeah, I would qualify us as definitely an emerging state market. And with that comes all of the warts and wonders of being a new industry.
Mm-hmm.
Being new, you just pointed out, yes, we are relatively small. I would call us a community. So unique to a lot of other industries, cannabis is very, very relationship-based just by its origin. So it's both an industry, but definitely a community. And I think we understand that and we try to balance that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really several industries, right? That's the way I've sort of thought of it, because there's the medical industry.
Yep.
Now there's the recreational industry. There's the whole CBD oil end of things for more medical products. Yep. And there's also the hemp, commercial hemp industry, the fiber and textile part of this, because everything you can do with cotton, you can pretty much do with hemp fiber, right?
I would say even beyond that, right down to hemp fiber is conductive. We can make circuitry out of it, for example, right? So we do know at this point that over 50,000 products could be easily developed with hemp. But specifically for us in Michigan, what does this matter to us? What does it mean? Our two biggest sectors, automotive and manufacturing, they're both massively impacted by hemp-based fiber. good 35-40% of a car could be replaced by hemp overnight. And they're doing it in Europe, and we will be porting that technology over to Michigan. So when we talk about cannabis, we're not only talking about folks in the medical side or pot and all that kind of community. We're talking about a new opportunity for Michigan and realigning our core sectors and supporting each core sector in a way that collectively we really boom.
Right.
So if we can replace a car with 35% of a hemp and grow our parts in a backyard, we're going to do really, really well.
Yeah, that's the whole agricultural side is what I think goes a little bit underreported because, we've got
– the third biggest industry in Michigan is agriculture.
Right, yeah, and it vies with tourism for number three, but you've got corn, soybeans, all the fruit on the west side of the state, and a lot of that land could be, commercial hemp production as well.
Certainly, but I wouldn't even look at that type of land more so that we have a lot of fallow land. Yeah. And that we haven't used effectively. We're also looking not only at fiber-based but other types of technologies out of hemp. So we're looking at a manufacturing footprint rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at some older facilities that we can recondition. So I think that the economic impact to cannabis is profound. We don't know where it's going yet. We're just starting off. It's quite an exciting time.
Yeah.
Well, already, though, Michigan is the number two medical marijuana market in the country, which 300,000 patients, 30,000 caregivers. I mean, only California is more, I believe, right?
That is correct. And I think that just for those that are listening, cannabis can easily be broken up into two worlds, marijuana and hemp. And hemp is either medicinal or fiber-based, making things out of it. For medical, it's the same plant, but by regulation, we say one is medical and one is recreational. The only difference in Michigan is that if you're recreational, you're going to pay 10% more in tax.
Mm. Yeah, good point.
So we do have a massive caregiver network that we draw upon to build our community and our industry today. All of our skilled laborers come from that category. Our new micro business and our new licensing coming up with recreational, most caregivers will probably take in those opportunities. So it really is binding those two things together now, caregiver and then this new industry coming.
And then even with that, we've been exploring over the last several months, you got the transporters, you've got the dispensaries, you got the growers. You're going to have the banking coming online. I know the feds are getting that all straightened out, and that'll be a lot easier on a lot of people. But there's a lot of potential businesses that are going to get spun off from all this, right?
I look at our commercial state conference coming up October 11 and 12 at the new renamed TCF Center.
Yes. AKA the Kobo Center for everybody else.
Yes. But we look at the variety of folks coming and interested participating in the industry. We have Restaurant and Lodging Association in Michigan.
Mm.
We have, all kinds of associations that have membership base, whether it be on the medical side or manufacturing side. Last year, when we had our state conference, we didn't have one single active licensee. Now we have over a couple hundred.
Mm. Yeah.
So in 1 year, everything has changed. We're launching our recreational framework. We've issued out 600 hemp licenses, and that is just the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you talked about the travel and tourism aspect of this. I just flashed upon the idea of, all those beer and wine tasting tours, now there's going to be pot tasting tours.
Or combine them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. We're not allowed to combine them yet, gentlemen.
But, they will, they'll quietly do it on the side if they have to.
Yeah,
right?
So. Yeah. The whole Northern Michigan wine scene is, that's a huge part of their tourism economy up there.
Oh, yeah.
So
in other states, cannabis tourism is big.
Yeah.
And we didn't have that opportunity a year ago. We didn't even have facilities. We didn't have storefronts. We didn't have facilities to show off, but now, wow.
Yeah.
And as an organization, Cannabis Aid goes to all of our licensees that will have us, and we drop in, show our love, shoot a little video, and share it with the community because it is such a unique industry that still we can't market normally. Right. So we have to market through our community. And that's why our community is so different and so important than other sectors.
Before we run out of time here, I know one of the things you wanted to talk about was the sort of intersection of technology in the cannabis industry. So talk about the importance of technology to the cannabis industry and what types of technology we're talking about.
I am so excited as a technologist in my previous life. For cannabis, we have everything, the full range coming in now, from analytics to obvious ERP systems, CRM systems to manage your customers. We have all new AI systems based to support growing and mass production around resource management, from water to CO2. It is a very, very technical production environment today. If you want to, number one, be safe, number two, be compliant, and number three, have a winning product that's consistent in the market.
No, that's key. I mean, it's like anything else. It can't be uneven. You're going to lose your customer base.
Yeah, correct. Every can of Budweiser has to taste the same. Just every McDonald's like, burger.
It's yeah, it. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's right now. We have obviously a lot of news right now with issues of illicit manufacturers producing vape cartridges that are killing people and this and that. This is why this industry needs to be properly regulated. Mm-hmm. Not over-regulated, but properly regulated, so we don't have these things happening. And technology and data have a huge part in that.
And there really aren't that many testing facilities. We had one of the testing facilities in a month or so ago. There's only like five in the state right now that I'm aware of. And so that's a heavy workload falling on them, and it's just going to grow. But I'm sure there'll be a lot more be coming online, right?
Oh, yeah. We have another 400 licensees, more than that, in process here.
Oh, do you?
So we're looking at the MRA, Michigan's Marijuana Regulatory Agency, has really, really stepped up their capacity to perform. Really, you know, very proud of the MRA. And so they're really setting us up to be able to scale.
So let's talk a little about that. We have a change of administration. I know the previous administration was kind of dragging their feet, being gentle. And I know I was at the Hash Bash, and Governor Whitmer wasn't there, but she had a audio welcoming speech where she was quite enthusiastically behind it. So have you seen a change in the MRA?
I have seen it in a sense that we have come from a place of ideal to action. Mm-hmm. We now have a mature program that's scalable, that is proven, that is becoming objective in its capacity to deliver. I think we still have a lot of few things to strengthen, such as our social justice program. But we're really in a great place overall, developing overall as a state, yes.
So what do you see as the social justice dimension of this?
Oh, God. If you really look at the numbers, I don't know by statistics, so I'm not going to even quote it, but disproportionately, we have certain ethnic populations that are impacted massively. And it's hard for us, for a big corporation, that to say, hey, let me make millions of dollars this year and somebody being in jail for the next 10 years for this.
For doing the same thing.
Yeah. And so we have now overlapping of sentences for thousands of people. And meanwhile, it's legal and big corporations are making money off of it. And so this is where the injustice lies. And not only that, releasing them, but giving them an opportunity to actually enter the industry.
We have 1 minute left. I've just got the signal. Go ahead. You get your shameless plug. Talk a little bit about how people can find out more about your conference.
Yeah, how can we register for the conference?
I would say cannabis-aid.com.
Okay.
Just go to cannabis-aid.com, or you can talk to any enthusiast in the cannabis sector in Michigan. They're going to know about our conference because it's quite important. It brings our community together. A few things. We have a super session on sports with some of our biggest players like Darren McCarthy and Megatron. We have a super session on quality and safety. We ultimately have 50 speakers and very excited. We introduced a whole new showcase of products because Michiganders are new to recreational. So we're going to showcase a whole set of products, technologies, brands that people want to know. So cannabis-aid.com, October 11 and 12.
Okay, that's Friday and Saturday, October 11th and 12th at the newly renamed TCF Center, formerly Cobo Center, the Michigan Commercial Cannabis Conference and Expo. Thank you, Thomas Tong, for being with us today.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening and watching at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And continuing on with our cannabis theme, we have Kyle Lisbeth. Is it pronounced Lisbeth? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that sounds right, Mike.
Okay.
Kyle Lisbeth with Silver Bullet Water Treatment.
Okay. And you're calling in from lovely downtown Cleveland. Why anybody wants to go there, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Rock and roll Hall of Fame,
baby. Rock and roll, yeah. And so
yeah.
And actually, we have in studio, we just finished with Thomas Tong, and he's got the headphones on listening. So don't say anything bad about the conference, okay? So
I'll try not to.
Okay, good. So you are with the Silver Bullet Water Treatment System, and let's start off with explaining what that is, because I just came up to speed on that over the weekend. So what is it that you guys do specifically?
Right. So, well, first, thanks for the opportunity, both to you and to Thomas for having us on your show. We greatly appreciate it, and we're excited. We're excited for the Michigan cannabis market. We do in a lot of different water treatment markets. So I kind of start by giving you a background of our company. We're based out of Colorado. We do water treatment and water management for a number of different applications and markets. We have over 1,000 treatment technologies installed, predominantly in our livestock drinking water division and cooling tower division. And data centers, all of which need a level of water treatment and water management. The horticulture industry is our youngest business unit, industry segment that we serve, and that includes plant production and controlled environment agriculture, leafy greens, produce, and of course cannabis. And we've been doing that successfully for a number of years. And the treatment technologies and the engineering consulting we provide to the industry has been well received. So we have a number of different treatment products, and we couple that with engineering design and automation and controls and basically a number of different solutions that help cannabis cultivators manage their water better.
So what are the unique challenges of water management in a cannabis production environment? I mean, I know it's plants, right? So they grow in water and soil or a soil substitute.
Right, right. At this day and age, again, reverting back to controlled environment agricultural production, that's predominantly where cannabis is being cultivated. Now you talk about controlled environments being greenhouses, or indoor facilities where you're trying to manage external variables, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the inputs to cannabis and to optimum plant production is water. Water is the driver and not only plant production and growth, but the driver of nutrients. And it can also be the driver of either beneficial or pathogenic microorganisms that can affect your crop. And so we look at that and we say, great, how can we make your operation more sustainable, more efficient? How can we prevent your risk of pathogens coming into your facility? And then how can we optimize those other additives that you're providing the plant to help you grow better, more consistent quality plants? And by the way, let's monitor all that while we do it, so you know exactly what your inputs are and how efficient your operation is.
In our previous interview with Thomas Tong, we were talking about consistency being key. Does having consistent water, does that play into that?
Yeah. Part of, again, sticking with the theme of controlled environment agriculture and optimizing cannabis production, you want consistency throughout your cultivation process. You want to limit those external variables. You want to have optimum ambient environmental quality. Okay, optimum ambient temperature and humidity and CO2 and air quality. The same on the nutrient side and the same on the water quality side. If your water quality varies, your pH varies, if the constituents in the water vary, you may or may not have uniform plant production on the back end. The quality of your plant is going to differ. And so inconsistencies in the products that you're producing is going to ultimately affect inconsistencies with what you're putting on the market and what your consumers are expecting.
Huh.
So part of it's consistent quality. And then again, I'll revert back. And part of it is preventing risk and making sure that you get the most optimum yield you can with good quality water.
Okay, so how do you see Michigan's new recreational cannabis rules affecting cultivation?
Michigan's an exciting market. Silver Bullet deals in a lot of different states and in Canada where, in respect to the cannabis industry. We're based out of Colorado, so we've kind of seen the recreational programs, you know, from the ground up. I think what Michigan's done really well is they've taken a very methodical approach to rolling out a controlled, regulated medical and cannabis and recreational market. And it's got the eye of the entire industry. You know, there's 10 million people in Michigan. You have a lot of caregiver carts, I think over 270,000.
300, actually.
Yeah.
300, okay. Yeah, those are probably last year's numbers. And on top of that, you know, it's brought in a lot of revenue for the state. And the projections, you know, from several, you know, reputable data research firms said, yeah, I mean, this state voted for it 60%. And there's a lot of consumers in the state. Let's roll it out safe and effectively. And so where Silver Bullet comes into play with that is there's going to be a lot of large cultivation operations. Part of the new licensing program is growers can now grow not just medical, but recreational as well. Growers can now have a higher plant count. Growers can now stack licenses. So you have very large facilities, and what we can provide is say, hey, look, let's make sure your water's treated and to the quality that you need it for optimum plant production. Let's make sure we're reusing and recycling your water when appropriate inside your facility. And let's make sure we're staying regulatory compliant. And that's one of the things that I think the Department of Environmental Quality, Michigan State's DEQ, has kind of said, hey, look, we have some concerns with this. You know, we're not putting any regulation out yet, but we're going to keep an eye on discharge. We're going to keep an eye on how much water you are using. We might put in place a special permit if you're using a lot of water. So utility management and appropriate water management and regulation is a talking point, not just in Michigan, but in the entire industry. And we're prepared to kind of address that and work with not only state officials, but the growers themselves to make sure they're compliant.
Thomas just passed me a note saying we should look at the differences in water, the well water, the rainwater, the city water. And does your system deal with all that and kind of balance everything out?
We do with a lot of it. We work with other companies and other technologies. You know, we kind of try and stay in our lane in terms of what treatment technologies we can provide. We partner with a lot of other water treatment and water management companies. The best approach to the market that we've found, being that, cannabis cultivation, covers, a large majority of the U.S. and Canada. Partnering with regional water management companies can be very effective. They know the local regulations. They understand the different water qualities, the different groundwater qualities, the different regional and state and even local regulations to be put in place. We do a lot of that work up front as well. We're going to be talking a lot about that at Cannabis AIDS event on October 11th and 12th. But yeah, we work with the growers each step of the way to ensure, hey, let's take a look at what your source water quality is. Let's take a look at how we're using that inside your building. Can we recycle your condensate water? Or can we recycle your irrigation water? And for your waste streams, where is that going? Do you have the ability to discharge to a municipality? Do you have the ability to discharge to surface waters? The state has already ruled out discharging to a septic system, I believe, at this point. So that's kind of not an option if growers were looking to do that. And there could be other options. So maybe a facility is located on agricultural zoned land. They could have the ability to reuse or recycle that irrigation runoff in a different manner.
So how can a better water management program reduce costs, make more revenue?
Right. So part of it's on being proactive. I mentioned risk prevention. That risk prevention, if you get a waterborne pathogen, and most growers know these very well, Pythium, Fusarium, Phytophthora, these waterborne pathogens can affect the roots and affect nutrient uptake and ultimately yield. So by preventing those, you're already one step ahead of the game. If you had an entire facility of 500 plants go down because you had a waterborne pathogen, it's more or less a six-figure mistake. And if you have, 3 to 5 harvests per year, it could be highly risky to not have a water treatment or prevention program in place. But on the other side, if you're treating your water or conditioning your water and monitoring your water, you're able to optimize all kinds of other things within the facility. You can optimize your pH adjustment and your nutrient program. And if you're collecting your runoff and recycling and reusing it, you're reusing those nutrients. So there's a number of different ways to capture ROI from, improving your water management program and reducing operational costs.
Okay, Kyle,
we don't talk.
We're under a minute now, so now is the time for your shameless plug. Tell people how to get a hold of you and to get a hold of Silver Bullet Water Treatment.
Well, I want to say again, thank you guys. I really appreciate it, Mike. I really appreciate Michigan Tech. I really appreciate Cannabis Aid. Google us, our website, silverbulletcorp.com. Check us out. We can answer any questions you have. If we can't, we can refer you to people that we work with within the industry. And I strongly suggest stop by the event. It's going to be a great event, October 11th and 12th. We'll have a wealth of information there, regionally specific information regarding Michigan. And happy to chat with anybody about any cultivation questions.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us today, Kyle Lisbeth of Silver Bullet Water Treatment. For right now, that's the end of this segment of the M-Squared TechCast, and it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching and listening at PodcastDetroit.com.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have calling in, as a disclaimer, one of my other business partners. Yes, I know, but it's my show and I can do what I want, right?
All right.
So, I have Dan Keelan calling in, and Dan, you know, I think I have a lot of projects, but I think I'm a piker compared next to you. Dan has just launched.
Oh my God!
Dan has just launched yet another project with a small, insignificant newspaper group here, right, Matt?
Yeah. Right, sure. Yeah. Never heard of him.
Yeah, Mobility Mondays, and actually, he just laid that on me last week, so I'm still coming up to speed on it too. So
it sounds really cool, Dan. What's the story with Mobility Monday? What's it about?
Well, let me tell you. So, you know, part of what we've been doing for the last year and a half with Global Automobility is really trying to tell the story of what's going on in kind of a big space. You know, when we launched it, I was thinking about autonomous vehicles, and then pretty quickly started to think about, you know, IoT and blockchain and artificial intelligence and smart cities and kind of all that connected, codependent technology. So we've been covering the news, doing some events, interviewing as many leaders as we can. And this is kind of an extension of that. You know, I believe there are a lot of people out there that are doing great work in companies that people haven't heard of.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a branding challenge for them. They're pretty busy men and women. And so in addition to talking about them and covering them, we thought, well, what if, you know, we started this as a quarterly idea, but we'll probably take the summer off. So three times a year, what if we did like a networking event where we brought these leaders in, let them talk to each other, give them a few minutes to talk to the audience there, see if we can fill the place up, capture the whole thing on video, promote it, and just kind of provide another platform. So we're talking to a couple of events right now. Actually, the final date, we're looking at November 4th. The fallback date is the 11th for the first one.
But what day of the week? What day of the week is that, Dave?
That's a Monday.
And
I'll tell you how I know that in just a minute.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
it's a project of Global Automobility, and Cranes is working with us as a promotional partner, which, you know, is really an honor because, you know, they're of course a big respected brand. And so they're going to help us get the word out, and hopefully it fulfills, you know, a lot of our mission and a little bit of their mission. But that's basically what it is. Create a networking platform for the leaders of the companies that are making all this difference in terms of, you know, connected technology. Bring them together and promote and celebrate what they're doing.
So you're going to be talking to them about all of the sort of enabling technologies of advanced mobility. So AI, cybersecurity, all of the technologies around autonomy and smart manufacturing as well, right?
Yeah. And as it's evolving, you know, it's kind of naturally kind of creating different content focus, I think, for each of them. The first one looks like it's going to be a little more focused on AI, autonomous vehicles, and also the education and training that's involved in all of that. That's kind of how the first event is rounding out.
Mm-hmm.
But right, it's a range. So if you're an IoT or an IIoT company, if you're involved in AI, if you're thinking about autonomous vehicles, but you're really thinking about the grid and the community and sort of the whole smart city concept, these are the kinds of people we want to attract. And as media, you know, we want to tell their story and we want to find out what the news is. But we also want to help them with their branding. And for business to business, you know, the fun thing about that is if you connect one company to another and then that helps grow both their businesses, then you've done a good job.
And this is going to be at the Detroit Mobility Lab?
So we're talking to a couple venues right now. Detroit Mobility Lab is on for at least one of them over the next year. That's the thing I was alluding to that we're going to kind of figure out over the next 2 days. But yeah, we're talking to a couple other venues that I probably shouldn't mention just because we haven't solidified anything with them yet. But we love the idea of being in Midtown, being at Wayne State. So that's certainly kind of driving us in that direction. And there's sort of this tagline of smart cities, smart cars, smart people, that we think, you know, it takes on maybe an elevated message when it's taking place at like our cherished research university in the heart of Midtown.
Well, there's a small, I guess, STEM-based kind of school in Southfield, too.
That might want to be involved in
might
this.
Might want to be involved.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's actually how, Dan, that I heard about this initially, because John Petty called and asked me to think about moderating one of the panel discussions at this thing.
Yes.
But I told him I'm having a knee replacement on November 4th, so I'm kind of going to be out of commission that day.
Go for the 11th then, because we got to have Matt there.
Oh, right? Yeah.
He's the celebrity.
Well, you know what's funny about that, Matt? I saw John this morning, and he said, I think we should move the event to the 11th. because Matt Roush is going to the hospital. And yeah. I didn't even know that you guys had talked. We talked about you. I didn't realize you had a conversation, so I kind of laughed, and I said, yeah, okay, we'll move it to the 11th.
All right. Well, you do it on the day that works for you, and I will. You know, I'm sure in a cloud of painkillers be watching on, you know, whatever webcast.
We'll just boot him up, and he'll be good, you know? So.
So, and I don't want to make it sound like, I mean, other than, you know, really pinning down the event, because there's been lots of moving pieces, it's really a pretty solid thing. We're talking, you know, right now to some training companies, a couple automotive suppliers, a couple of law firms that are really interested. We have opportunities for the right underwriters to kind of underwrite the whole series if they kind of want to be the, you know, the exclusive, the way all that sponsorship works. They get a kind of a speaking opportunity. We'll capture it in video, deliver it back to them. Signage at the event, exposure in global automobility, exposure in cranes. Maybe we can talk Mike Brennan into giving them some exposure in, you know, one of his popular publications.
Cross my palm with silver, you know.
yeah, I know. That's what it is. And the next, anybody that's interested, by the way, if they go to globalautomobility.com, we've got a banner sitting there at the top of the page. You can click on it and send me an email. And that's good right now for someone who's just interested in attending. So we've got you know, tickets available for folks that are interested in just finding out more about the series, or they want to speak at it, or they think it's kind of, you know, a good place for their CEO to be. Let me know. In the next week, we're going to send out a survey to everybody in the market, kind of trying to get a really good idea of kind of topics. So, you know, this could, like I said, we're going to do the first one in November, second one probably early March. And so part of what will drive the agenda for those is going to be the feedback we get from the community. So the survey is intended to help us, you know, drive the agenda in the best way.
As I look through your sheets, I don't see the duration. Is this a morning event, a breakfast event? How are you thinking about it?
Yeah, so it's a morning event. We actually went back and forth. So we might mix it up. The first one's going to be a morning event, you know, 8 o'clock, coffee, bagels, all of that, networking till 9. Everybody probably out between 10:30 and 11. We have talked to a couple of venues that would like to do more of an afternoon event, and then, you know, end up with a happy hour and some music and that. So we're going to see how the first one goes, obviously, but we might move them. We might mix them up. We might do a morning version, and we might do kind of an like a morning with coffee version, and then an afternoon with wine version, and see if we can please everybody.
All right. So why do you see this? Why do you see now is the right time to do this?
Well, I just think from a Michigan point of view, mobility is important. You know, the industry's changed a lot. The industry's matured a lot. You know, even though people talk about brain drain, you know, if you talk about advanced engineering and the technology that's really driving the future of the car or the house or the city, a lot of it's happening here. And so we just think being at Wayne State, being in Detroit, being in Michigan, being in the Midwest, it's a great time to have the conversation. And everybody we've talked to has been interested in speaking or appearing or attending. I think there's a hunger for it because if you think about, think about the work that Ford's doing up and down Michigan Avenue, right? And a lot of it's happening, well, not without fanfare, but you've got an audience of people that are really hungry to know. So what's going on now and what's next? And we just want to provide the platform. We see, just as you guys do, tons of investment in the region. And so I think the time's great. And as I said, the interest we're getting from our audience is huge.
I think Planet M would probably be interested. I know a few people there. Yep. I could make some calls, you know. So
yep.
This is right up their alley. And I think the governor – go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I think things like the you know, I know the lieutenant governor spoke at your event in April. You've got people at that level,
yep.
You know, across the board that have a stake in it, have an interest in it. We'd love to. We also don't want to be reinventing the wheel. You know, there's this sense that there's always an organization to join or an event to go to. This isn't intended to compete with those. It's really intended to kind of bring in the best of the best.
Yeah. And like I say, if you rotate it around the metro area, I mean, certainly downtown's a great place. Southfield would be another great place. You know, Troy would be another great place. And that way you're going to attract different crowds.
Yep. Agreed. So I think part of it for us is going to just be a learning process as we kick the first one off. You know, it'll become apparent to us what's working and what we need to, you know, maybe tweak for event number two.
Yeah. All right, so we're looking at Dave there. 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
Yeah, 1.5.
1.5.
Yeah.
Okay. Couldn't tell from these. He's giving me all these hand gestures, you know. So I'm, normally, Jessica would give me a different hand gesture, but she's not here right now. So, so you got about a minute or so left. So talk about one more time. If people want to get involved in this, they want to reach out to you, how would they want to do it? How do they do that?
Yep. The most direct thing is globalautomobility.com. You will see at the top of the homepage a Mobility Mondays banner. Click on that. It'll send me an email. Let me know if you'd like to get a coffee or a beer, have a conversation. If you're interested in sponsoring, that's probably the most direct way to find out more, get on our mailing list, and get involved.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Dan Keelan, publisher of Global Automobility, talking about a new project called Mobility Mondays in partnership with Cranes Detroit. Want to thank Dan and thank all of our guests today. We had Kyle Lisbeth here from Silver Bullet Water Treatment. We had Thomas Tong about the Michigan Commercial Cannabis Conference coming up in Detroit October 11th and 12th. And we kicked off the show with Bruce Sizemore, CEO of More Golf, talking about his Michigan-based specialty golf club manufacturing company. This was a wide variety of interests here today.
It's just one of them shotgun shows, you know, where we got a little bit of everything.
Absolutely. Well, that's what makes it fun. We'll be back again next week at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.